Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
It's time to talk football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you guys have questions for John, text them in right now to 710-710, the Busy Hard Seltzer text line. We'll try to get to your questions before we let him go. Hello, John.
Hello. How are you?
We're good. We're good.
Hey, busy day today, huh?
What's
on the coaching front, the GM front, all the different things that happened today. Wow.
Well, Maura was just telling me during the break, it looks like our old buddy Daryl Bevel might have a job with the Jacksonville Jaguars as their coordinator.
Yeah, it looks like he's going to be the offensive coordinator because it looks like they're trying to work out a deal right now, and they'll get that done probably by tomorrow. And we all know that Raheem Morris ended up going to the Rams as a defensive coordinator. We've got the hiring of Nick Sirianni in Philadelphia, as opposed to Joshy Boy McDaniels. Way to go, Eagles! And so it's
wait,
like,
you don't like Joshy Boy?
No.
Okay.
Yeah,
I knew that.
I mean, again, it's funny because you've seen tweets coming out today that said that so you can treat players bad, you can treat owners, you can treat coaches bad, you can treat general managers bad, but don't treat an owner bad. And by pulling out of the job in Indianapolis at the last minute after accepting it to stay with the Patriots, then you wonder how much did that play into Jeff Lurie's decision, because I think Lurie has a good relationship with Robert Irsay, and so they had a 9-hour interview with Joshy Boy, and then Nick Sirianni, who ironically just happened to be down in the Florida area, and was somebody that really I think they targeted more because of Carson Wentz, because what they know is that he's tied to Frank Reich, and of course Nick Sirianni works well with Frank, and Frank had been in Philadelphia coaching up Carson Wentz, and so it looks like this was a move really to kind of put things together to get Carson Wentz better.
So now there's just one potential landing spot for Eric Bieniemy, right?
That is Houston. Correct.
So what do you think happens?
The thing that I hear is it's going to be, particularly if the Bills lose this week, it could be Leslie Frazier. But in a lot of ways, what you may be looking at is that, it could be the loser of the Kansas City Buffalo game could lose one of their offensive coaches, one of their coaches, because Leslie Frazier obviously is a defensive coach. So if the Bills lose, then Leslie can go over and get the job with Houston. Or if Kansas City lose, then maybe they can go with Eric Bieniemy. Also in the mix is Jim Caldwell, the former Colts Lions coach. So they're still kind of working on that.
Hey, John, the Detroit Lions, we talk about all these coaching geniuses and everything. They went a different way. Dan Campbell, I thought that was really funny, though, that we're looking for creative play callers and this and that. And here's a guy that, I don't know if you heard that speech, but that he gave about how we're going to hit people in the head and bite kneecaps and things like that. He kind of came, to me anyway, John, he kind of came out of nowhere. I know he played in the league and everything, but I thought that was interesting they went with that.
Yeah, very interesting, because, again, I think it surprised everybody, because you're talking about somebody that hasn't called plays. I mean, he's not the coordinator. I know Nick Sirianni didn't call plays because that was all Frank Reich. But, it's just like out of nowhere, they get somebody who is a former Lions player, and he may not be calling plays, but I guess he's going to be biting off the kneecaps of opponents on the field. So it's like it's interesting to be able to put it that way. They ended up getting Aaron Glenn, who I think is a pretty good coach out of New Orleans, as the defensive coordinator. So I thought that was a pretty good idea. So, we're going to see. I mean, I just kind of wonder. I mean, here you have a coach who really hadn't been a coordinator, and you have a general manager, Brad Holmes, who's never been in the office. I mean, he's been an area scout. And so, is this combination going to work? And then to make things even crazier, I think they both got 6-year deals.
Yeah, that's right. Dan Campbell did.
Yeah. Did Andy Reid wasn't a coordinator, though, right?
What's that?
Andy Reid was never a coordinator, was he? I don't think
he was. No, he wasn't. No, because he was on Holmgren's staff, right? And
so the quarterback coach?
He was a quarterback coach, And he did pretty well.
Yeah, he's done
not
all right
bad.
For himself,
he's
hasn't
not
he?
Not bad.
But John, you probably had heard about Dan Campbell. I mean, it was very unanticipated for me, and especially that long of a deal. I don't know. It was just seems strange.
It's the Lions.
It's Detroit. Exactly.
It's Detroit, yes.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, Justin Herbert, wow. I mean, you know, we hear that Staley is really eager to build Brandon Staley, the new head coach for the Chargers, around Justin Herbert. I was looking at his, you know, 15 games, 66% completion. You know, he went 6-9, you know, played in 15 games, but 31 touchdowns, 10 interceptions, and won the last four in a row in which he threw 8 touchdowns, one interception, and then ran for 2 TDs. Very quietly, I mean, maybe it's not quiet, but he really was fantastic.
Yeah. No, he was the rookie of the year without any question. I mean, it's like you can maybe look at Justin Jefferson at wide receiver, but how do you turn down a quarterback that threw for that many yards? Because I think, it might have been a record for a rookie quarterback in how many yards he threw, and he didn't start the season as a starting quarterback.
Right.
Hey, John, what are your memories? I don't know what your interactions were with Ted Thompson, passed away, you know, former Green Bay Packers GM.
Well, I wrote this for 710sports.com. Is I'm going to have a little bit of a hard time watching the Packer game on Sunday. And the reason for that is that, obviously, I got to know Ted very well, and he was so accommodating to me as a reporter when he was here from 2000 to 2004. And so the story that I told, and this is why it's going to be really tough, is that you know how I try to call just about everybody I can to prepare my mock draft. Not that I was trying to win any kind of mock thing. I just want to try to know what teams are going to do. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things I looked at back in 2005, which was his first year as the general manager, was that, there's two quarterbacks in this draft. Alex Smith, who's expected to be the number one pick in the draft, and some guy named Aaron Rodgers. And so I'm going through my mock draft, and I knew that Washington was considering taking a quarterback. But I didn't. In the end, I was hearing, well, they're not going to take a quarterback. And so what I ended up doing is on the Friday night, before the Saturday draft, I called Ted Thompson and I said, hey, Ted, I know, don't consider me being stupid here, but I just have to tell you something. Because, you know, the one thing, you know, Dave, Bob, you know, as a reporter, you don't ask somebody what they're going to do, particularly a general manager. It's like they're not going to tell you. So it's like you avoid this. But I said, Ted, I just got to tell you this. You probably know this, but I just got to say to you that if Aaron Rodgers gets past the 9th pick in this draft, he's coming to you at 24. Now, naturally, Ted, being the professional that he was, you know, said, oh, I appreciate that. That's interesting. You know, didn't tip his hand that he knew it or didn't know it or anything else. I do know that they had a little bit of a meeting afterwards, and it very well could just have been a regular Friday night meeting before they go in. But I know that the Aaron Rodgers thing was brought up. And so all of a sudden, here comes the draft. Washington doesn't take Aaron Rodgers. He falls to 24. Ted Thompson takes him, and sure enough, it turned out exactly like I thought it would. And he gets, you know, he goes from one Hall of Fame quarterback in Brett Favre, because, you know, Favre was getting older, starting to show signs of age, although he still had a couple more years left. And then Rodgers comes in, sits for 2 years, and then has had his own Hall of Fame career. So as I watch this game on Sunday, I think I'm going to be a little bit touched on it, because, again, it's not like I helped Ted Thompson, because he probably knew, but I thought it was okay to be able to break that news if he didn't know it, to study it and see what's going to happen, because I know at some point they're going to be looking for that replacement for Brett Favre.
I'm guessing they knew it.
Yeah, they probably did. Yeah, I wouldn't doubt that.
Because I was at the draft that year. Yep. We used to go every year, and the word was the Niners were desperately trying to trade that pick, that
right.
They didn't want to go with Alex Smith.
Uh-huh.
And Aaron Rodgers was going to be a consideration, obviously being from California, and there was that connection. So, yeah, it was swirling all over the place, and they were talking about potential landing spots for Rodgers. Mm-hmm. And was that the first time we saw really focused on a player at the draft who was expected to go higher, and then every pick that wasn't him, the camera would go to him?
Yeah. That would be a classic example.
Was he the first one that,
he wouldn't be the first,
that we
brought
into our con? Like, man, this poor guy. Every pick that's not him, they keep flashing to him to get a reaction.
Yeah. Well, I know it's the thing that was so weird about it, because, you know, in some teams' boards, the ratings were pretty much the same, you know, Alex being the equal of Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, one of the things that you know, the coach at Cal at that time kind of messed up Aaron a little bit, because if you remember, Jack Tedford was the head coach, and what he would do, because he was also almost like a quarterback coach, he would have everybody throw the same way. You know, because in other words, he wants the arm up right by the ear, and you have to throw it that way. And so that's, and it kind of hurt Aaron Rodgers a little bit, because he wasn't throwing his natural way. Now, this comes from conversations that I've had with Aaron through the years, and particularly like 2 years into his career, because I go to a Packer training camp and I'm talking to Aaron, and I said, what's going on with you? It's like, you're throwing so great right now. Not that you weren't great, but I mean, you so with so much more authority, with so much more power. He says, I'll tell you exactly what it is. He says, you know, in the NFL, in college, they're, you know, very attentive to the style. And of course, I had to throw a certain way to satisfy the coach. He says, but in the NFL, they're not as demanding as far as the exact way to throw. So I basically went back to my high school way of throwing the football. And that's the way he's been throwing it now his entire career since getting into the NFL.
Was he compacting?
No, he wasn't compact. I mean, you know, he just lets it fly. I mean, he reaches out. I mean, you know, it's not, he doesn't necessarily have to have that ball kind of tucked in right close to the ear or right by the ear. It's like, it's more of a natural thing. And, you know, he's just did so well in being able to throw that way. And you see, he's still able to throw that way.
I remember, I think the stunt on him was that he could kneel at the 50-yard line. Mm-hmm. On one knee and flip the ball through the goalpost.
Felt like Kyle Buller had that reputation of being able to do that. I remember, I think Jamarcus Russell was a guy. I'm like, glad they could do
the
that.
The problem with Kyle Buller is he would do that and would be intercepted and taken back for a touchdown.
and the other part is both those guys were spending a lot of time on the ground anyway, having to throw from a knee. So
I still like the other story that Aaron told me, because he started as a junior college quarterback before he went to Cal. And you know, he says, I can tell you this right now. Once I was in my freshman year at the JC, he's like, I had to be an immediate leader. I says, why is that? He says, first off, you're going to be 17, 18 years old. And the way that the junior colleges, many of them were, is that you had guys that were, you know, some 28, 29 years old, some coming, had been in prison and all that stuff. He says, if you can't manage that huddle and run the huddle without getting respect, you're in deep trouble.
Hmm. Hey, Bob's not going to like hearing this. Robert Saleh came in to the Jets. He's talking about Sam Darnold, and he says, there's a reason. He says, what I can tell you with regards to Sam is he's got an unbelievable arm talent. That's what we hear a lot about him.
That's what arm I kept hearing coming talent. Out of college.
Just not talent in his brain, maybe. Anyway, there's a reason why he was the number three pick in the draft. He's fearless in the pocket. He's got a natural throwing motion. He's mobile. He's extremely intelligent. He's tough as nails. His reputation in the locker room is unquestioned. Just that in general, there's reason why he was the third pick in the draft. So anyway, sounds like Robert Saleh. I mean, he's obviously not going to come in there and, I mean, I guess he could
say, stinks.
Well, we're going to have to take a look at everybody. But, I mean, it's just another coach that is kind of gushing over Sam Darnold.
Well, and of course, he's saying the words, but again, he even said at the press conference today, because they asked him, it's like, well, do you get any control over personnel? He says, no. Final say goes to Joe Douglas, the general manager. It's like, we'll work together on things, and, I'll make my recommendations and all that stuff, but he has final say. So it's like, he's saying the right thing for two reasons, I think. You know, number one, if they want to trade that strong-armed guy, they don't want to diminish his value. And, like, for example, which a deal that's not going to happen, but it's like Deshaun Watson. You know, at least with the two first-round picks and other draft choices that Joe Douglas has been able to assemble, you know, they have the ability to come up what would be the equal of three number one picks and two other high picks to be able to, you know, put themselves in a possible position to get Deshaun Watson. And, of course, Sam Darnold would be the equivalent of one of the number one picks. And so, you know, that consideration would be there. And, you know, Miami is not as strong as the Jets, but, you know, they can put Tua in some of the draft choices that Bill O'Brien squandered to get Laremy Tunsil and all the draft choices he traded away. You know, that could be, you know, one consideration. But in the end, everything I hear out of Houston is they're not trading Watson.
John, did the Steelers just sign the heir apparent to Ben Roethlisberger and Dwayne Haskins?
No.
They signed him.
They signed him, yeah. I mean, they signed him as a young quarterback prospect. I'm sure he came in very cheaply, but, you know, and because the plan still is to keep Ben Roethlisberger at quarterback. But to think that, you know, it's like Dwayne Haskins had trouble beating out Taylor Heinicke. Right. And you know, his work ethic was bad. The teammates didn't like him as much. And so now he goes into a Steeler locker room that has, you know, more wins than the Washington football team. So, you know, I think it's a smart move on their part because you get a young prospect. And, you know, I know today they're talking to Hugh Jackson as a possible offensive coordinator. And so maybe Hugh can turn him around and put him in the right direction. And maybe Ben can help him out, too. But is he the replacement? I'd say right now, no.
Hugh Jackson is a play caller that I've admired.
Yeah.
Watching him when the Seahawks have gotten ready to play him, I think he does a really good job.
I do too, yeah.
John, good news. We're not going to have to move the AFC Championship game, it looks like.
Oh,
to like Tuesday.
Colin Coward thinks you might.
Yeah. Who was it that did? Oh, it was Schlereth that did the impersonation.
Oh, yeah. They're just tall.
NBA players are tall. Yeah. But anyway, it looks like he took majority of snaps at practice. Yeah. So it looks like we're going
to
be.
Sounds to me like he went into phase four from phase three, because phase three in that five phase protocol says that on phase three, you can be out there for 30 minutes and 30 minutes only doing limited type stuff. Well, today, you know, of course, if you're going to be in phase four is non-contact work, which obviously, you know, anybody that makes contact with a quarterback wearing a red jersey named Patrick Mahomes is going to be cut. So it's like nobody's touching him. And so, you know, and the fact that he took all the snaps, I think, does tell you that he's on pace right now to be cleared and be able to start. Now, again, he's still going to have some problems because he's going to have the sore neck. He's going to have the sore toe. And so he's not going to be 100%. But again, you know, most players in this league aren't 100% when you're this late in the season.
Oh, was that his toe that he hurt earlier? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we were talking about him and, you know, maybe he would be the one guy that you would trade, you know, Russell for, because there's, you know, talk about the Deshaun Watson and everything. But the durability, John, of Russell Wilson, you can't. I mean, we don't really know. He's missed a couple of games because the popped off kneecap. But other than that, I mean, I guess he's been pretty
pretty glad they found it.
Yeah. But I mean, like, yeah, it came off like a Coke bottle cap. But yeah, I mean, look, that's the thing about Russell, that it just makes you appreciate how, you know, remember the shot that he took in the NFC Championship game from Clay Matthews mm-hmm. in 2014, John? It didn't even rattle him. Even if it did, you couldn't tell. But, I mean, look, the durability has to be a factor. And I just wonder about Mahomes. I mean, that was just kind of a weird hit that he yeah. took. And, you know, Russ takes that hit. He gets up, brushes it off, no problem.
Yeah, but of course, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I don't know if it's being more compact that may help him out. Obviously, it's the way he conditions himself and the way that he prepares and all that. But, you know, Patrick being taller and, of course, the two plays, I mean, you know, it's not like Patrick did anything wrong. Like on the one play, the defensive player was spinning him around after he had released the ball and got his foot twisted in the ground, and that got the toe injury. And then the other guy came over as he was starting to come down from a run and hit his helmet right into, you know, the back of his head and caused the concussion and the neck problem. So it's like, and you could tell he was really out of it briefly.
John, I hate to say this, but his helmet was never touched.
Oh, it wasn't? Okay.
No. Not by a player, not by the ground. It was the crazy. Yeah, I've watched it 20 okay. times, John. It is the weirdest injury I've ever seen. And it was more like being choked out, you know, and it obviously tweaked a nerve in his neck or something. Right. But there was no blow to the head by a body part or the ground. It was the craziest thing ever.
Well, because if I recall, but obviously I haven't seen it as many times as you did, it was just a little bit, you know, above the shoulder. Mm-hmm. Clearly was not a cheap shot hit.
No.
None whatsoever.
He didn't even get hit. He just got tackled. He just got brought down to the ground, grabbed and brought to the ground rather than somebody running into him. And that's what made it even more odd.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and it's so weird how those concussions happen. I mean, and I've had some head-on, you know, big-time hits that didn't do anything. And then one time I got kneed in the side of the head just slightly, and it was like I was gone for 20 minutes.
Yeah. Usually it's to the back of the head where you're really sensitive.
Yeah. But, yeah, and the whiplash thing, it's just it's very strange. But it's a dangerous game. So what are you going to do?
Do your best.
Best you can.
Hey, John, we were having that hypothetical conversation at the beginning of the show because, you know, it's certainly not the majority of fans, but I'm sure you've probably seen it on the heels of a disappointing loss. People are pointing fingers. This is Pete's fault. This is Russell's fault. And within that small minority, we've seen people say, trade Russell Wilson. Trade him for Deshaun Watson. Trade him while he's still got value. And we played it out. We just played the hypothetical earlier. Like, all right, if you were going to trade him, who would you trade him for? And really the only guy you could say gives you a better chance of winning is probably Patrick Mahomes at this point. I mean, yeah. You know, Tom Brady's the greatest ever, but he's 43. If Aaron Rodgers were 32 or younger, I'd say Aaron Rodgers. But outside of that, is there any quarterback you would trade him for?
No. I mean, you know, you think about the idea that, you know, and I can't say for sure he'll get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. I think particularly if he gets back to one more Super Bowl, he'll definitely go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's more likely he'll go to the Pro Football Hall of Fame because you can argue he's, you know, among the top three or four or five quarterbacks in the league. You know, because right now you'd have to go with Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers, but I think you can easily put Russell Wilson number three, and in the early part of the season he was number one. But to trade somebody like that is foolhardy because, again, you cost yourself. Because if you take away a Hall of Fame quarterback like that, your 12-win seasons become 7-win seasons. I give you, even though he's 43 years old, Tom Brady leaving the New England Patriots. What, mm-hmm. did they go 6-10?
Yeah. Hey, on the same topic here, I saw an article written about Deshaun Watson and if he's traded, what do they get in return? And they were quoting an anonymous front office guy from a team saying it's at least, in this guy's opinion, the quote was at least 3 first-round picks,
mm-hmm.
in addition to other things.
Right.
Does that sound right?
That's exactly what I was saying just a little bit ago. I said the equivalent of 3 first-round picks and 2 other high picks over a 3-year period. And so, you know, that limits the number of teams that can even consider it. And also, you know, if you make those trades, how are you going to be able to bounce back? Because you're not going to have the parts around him to be able to fill and get a better team. So, and if you're talking the Jets, now maybe Miami is a better team clearly than the Jets because the Jets have nothing. Because, you know, once Frank Gore went on IR, they didn't have a Pro Bowl player on the roster. You know, Miami at least has 2 good cornerbacks and some other good players, a couple offensive linemen that aren't bad, but no, you rob yourself. And again, the point I keep on hearing from down there, as bad as it is for Watson, and he definitely wants out, but he hasn't asked for a trade yet, is that they're not going to trade him.
Hypothetically, what would Russell bring back in return if the Seahawks woke up tomorrow and said, you know what, we're trading him? What would they get back?
I'd say 2 number ones, because again, it's not saying, because you know the difference is going to be the youth,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Because you know he's in his 20s and Russell's in his 30s, so I'd say, you know, 2 number ones and maybe a number two, maybe 2 number twos, but again, you know, at least 3 draft choices, 2 of them being number ones.
Gotcha. John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, if you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. We spoke with Brady Henderson yesterday about the linebacker situation, and we talked about the future of KJ, and he brought up something that may impact that future. We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.